This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Michigan League for Public Policy has not always agreed with Governor Rick Snyder's ideas for taxes and spending, but the organization that focuses on addressing poverty says there is much to like in the governor's proposed spending plan. But there's also a warning as lawmakers begin debate on a new budget for the state of Michigan. Gilda Jacobs is the president of the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you. What do you consider the most encouraging proposals in Governor Rick Snyder's proposed budget?
Well, there are actually quite a few very encouraging things in the budget. But I think probably the most important one is that the budget is upholding the continued funding for the Healthy Michigan Plan. As you know, the Healthy Michigan Plan really gave 600,000 Michiganians with low income health care for many of them for the first time. So this is huge. This is really, really huge. The governor, from the beginning, really understood not only the importance of doing this for low-income residents of the state, but also, you know, he understands the economics of doing it as well.
So what are the economics? I mean, certainly there's a certain human part of this where you say, well, people should get health care. Why is it economically beneficial, do you think, to the rest of the state?
Well, before we actually had the expansion of Medicaid as well as the Affordable Care Act, so many low-income people were having their health care taken care of in the emergency rooms. That is really not a very good way to provide access to medical care. And I believe that the hospitals have saved something like $300 million in uncompensated care by being able to have the people that are coming in, you know, have insurance, and then not using the ER room for their treatment.
So your statement also says that this budget proposal helps leverage federal funds for state services. This is maybe a little technical, but can you maybe explain to our audience how this works?
Well, there's actually, you know, a couple of areas that are really great in the budget that address that. If the state puts up money for certain things, then we're able to draw down other federal funds. So Heat to Eat is a program that allows us to draw down money for low-income people for food assistance. And, you know, we're going to be putting up just under $7 million in order to do that. Also, there's other child care funds that we're able to secure by putting up a state match. And the governor has put in $8.4 million in state funds in order to do that. You know, when we don't do that, one, we leave money on the table that actually other states use. But, you know, these are really, really important areas for Michigan. You know, we want to be sure that our that folks that need food for themselves and their kids are getting it. And also, the child care system in Michigan, unfortunately, does not get very high ratings if you compare us to other states. And if we want to make sure that their parents are going to work, and that they can leave their kids in high-quality, safe child care situations, then we really have to be able to kind of put our money where our mouth is with this. And we're really able to do that with this extra funding.
What does the governor's proposed budget say about the priority of education in Michigan, in your opinion?
Well, there is a couple of areas that we really feel are really good. There's an increase in school funding for at-risk kids. You know, what that does is it really shows the commitment and the understanding that it really does cost more to educate kids who are at risk, who are living in poverty, who, you know, are living in some really adverse conditions. So it recognizes that. So very, very pleased with that. There's additional money for high school students, additional money for K-12 as well.
So as I said at the beginning, there's a warning in here, and the warning is if lawmakers go ahead with a proposal which is out there to cut the state income tax. Why would this not be good as you see it?
Okay, well, I think the important thing is that was not in the governor's budget.
Correct,
so sometimes we celebrate what's not in the governor's budget. You know, if we take a look at other states that have done this, and Kansas jumps out, you know, Kansas tried to do this, and then all of a sudden, they really had buyer's remorse, and there were severe consequences. So in other states that have done that, and they figured out, oh my gosh, we don't have the money to help support essential services, you know, like infrastructure, like schools, they've turned around and found other ways to tax their residents. And that's what's going to happen here. You know, you can't starve the beast so much. And the governor recognizes that. has not put in any kind of tax cuts. So the concern is, where is the legislature going to be coming from with this? And we've already seen some proposals that have us quite worried, quite honestly. And we're going to be studying this very carefully, messaging about this all the time, because we really feel that this would not be a good thing for Michigan. We don't want to see any kind of repeal or rollback of the state income tax.
Now, part of the argument that people are making for an income tax cut of some sort is that Michigan's revenues have been going up quite substantially. And I guess the argument they would make is, why shouldn't some of that go back to the taxpayers?
Well, I think we can see, if you use Flint as an example, that sometimes really bad things happen that you don't plan for. So if you give back all the money and you don't have money either put in a robust rainy day fund or putting it right into infrastructure programs, you're going to end up coming up short and not having the money to address emergencies. Think about your own budget at home. You know, if you were to have a major problem with your home and aren't able to, have the funds to take care of it, you're going to have to go out and, let's say, get a loan and pay, a lot of money in interest, because the problems aren't going to go away. And just because today we have, an extra $300 million, it's at one time. We don't know if the economy is going to collapse again in the future. One of the proposals ratchets back the income tax, the state income tax, over the next 40 years. Believe me, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what we're going to be faced with in 5 years or 10 years, let alone 40 years. And I think it's really unwise of legislators to put in a system of taxation where they are no longer going to be accountable for the results and what happens. We're going to be probably, many of us are going to be dead and gone in 40 years when, the chickens come home to roost. And I just don't think that this is a very smart, strategic way for us to be setting up tax policy.
The Michigan League for Public Policy does a lot of work examining what is best for people who are at the lower end of the income scale. But a lot of those are still working families. Could they use some tax relief?
I think there's a philosophy out there where we have to figure out where are our priorities as a state. So whether you're low income or middle income or, a higher income, there's certain things that are taxes are good for the public good, whether they're parks, whether they're roads, whether there's, certain public health kinds of things. So taxes are not always a bad thing. They really provide the dollars to make sure that we have a quality of life that is important for everybody. So I think we have to really look big picture when we take a look at taxes.
So on the subject of taxes as well as infrastructure, which you mentioned a moment ago, you recently wrote about investment in infrastructure and the tragedy that your family experienced now almost 2 years ago. For our listeners who are not familiar with this, would you please share that with them?
Sure. My daughter, Rachel, was on a train for coming back from Philadelphia to New York. The train careened out of control. The train derailed. My daughter and seven other people perished, died because of this. Another 250 people walked off, many with injuries, but still were alive. The tragedy of this is that the technology to have stopped the speeding train was not put in place on that train. The technology was there, but some decision was made at some point by Amtrak not to have it installed on all of the trains. And yet it was supposed to be there, could have been there, had it been there, would have avoided this horrible, horrible, tragic accident where my daughter and seven others died for no reason. They didn't have to die. And if you really, this is obviously more complicated than just having that technology installed, but you can really connect the dots to how important infrastructure is to the very lives of the individuals that use our roads, our trains, our bridges, our drink our water. There's a clear connection that there are people behind these decisions or indecisions. And, you know, it's very easy when you're a legislator to, you know, look at data, look at numbers, look at charts, to say, oh, we can avoid doing this for now. We can wait until later. Well, the fact is people's lives and their families are affected forever when certain decisions are not made or put off. And unfortunately, you know, what happened on that Amtrak train could have been avoided if that investment had been made.
And you also make that connection to what happened in Flint, which is a different type of infrastructure, but is an investment in infrastructure.
It's really exactly the same kind of a situation. It didn't have to happen. You know, decisions were not made that would not have changed the trajectory of the lives of kids and seniors and other vulnerable people that were drinking from that water system.
Are you trying to get people to think about this in a different way? Because I think when people think infrastructure, often it's roads, and then the question is, oh, do I need to get an alignment now? Or do I, if we had a better road, I might not have to get an alignment for 6 or 9 months. I mean, are you trying to put these issues in a little more of a human context and maybe a little more urgency around them?
Exactly. I am trying to put this human face onto the budget decisions that we make. They're just not numbers on a chart. There are human beings involved when we make these decisions or don't make these decisions and these investments. And that's really what I'm trying to do. You know, I've not written anything or really been very public since my daughter's death, but when I see this now conversation going on in the state to repeal the state income tax or ratchet back our taxes, I can't help but think about what happened in my family. And I think we have to talk about this out loud, and that's why I've done this, and that's why I'm becoming, you know, public on this, because I want legislators to understand the human faces that are behind these decisions. And, you know, what happened with Flint, I mean, a lot of very talented journalists, you know, helped to make that human connection. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, that's Flint, and, you know, we've done so much already, you know, with Flint. But the fact is, it's not just Flint. It's what's happening all over the state when we don't make those investments. So it's way beyond just what happened in Flint. It's, you know, where are we as a state? What investments do we make going forward as a state?
Gilda Jacobs, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Gilda Jacobs is the president of the Michigan League for Public Policy. A link to Gilda Jacobs' post on her daughter's death and investing in infrastructure can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.